Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com. Amazon and select retailers nationwide.
Welcome back to Double Play. I am here with Jeff Vibbert.
Hello. Thank you, Clemmer. Thank you for having me.
Jeff, Vibbs is wearing, of course, his headphones for no reason. There's no reason to wear those here.
I'm a professional. They're called cans. I wear my cans.
You have nice cans.
It adds to the illusion of being on like a Howard Stern radio show. You know what I mean? Makes you feel like you're a real broadcaster.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a real show. We talk about movies, sports movies, of course.
I can talk about. I know how loud I'm talking into the mic. That way, because I can. You know what I mean?
Is it helping you?
Because I can't hear now. I can hear myself.
You can't hear. So how do you like walk around the streets and you talk to people?
I leave my headphones in all the time.
Right. Today we're covering Bull Durham and McFarland, USA. I brought Vibbs in because he ran cross country in college.
Yep, cross-country athlete. We are mental warriors. It is 99% mental, 1% physical.
I always thought it was 99% people who couldn't play their sports and 1% physical.
Yeah, I'd say so. If real athletes did cross-country, the cross-country runners doing it now would not be participating.
Probably not, yeah. That's okay. And obviously Bull Durham, of course, a classic baseball movie. We also wanted to do the Kevin Costner double feature here.
Kevin Costner was on a tear in the late 80s, yes. Early 90s.
Not as much in 2015.
2015,
the tear was probably over.
That was you did a like a draft day.
Yes,
did
which we covered on this show, which I did not like.
McFarlane, draft day. My dad, any movie my dad likes, I'm worried. I'm worried about
draft day. Is not good. It's very dumb.
Yeah, he thinks it's great.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah.
No. Ready to talk Bull Durham first?
I'm ready.
To talk the old
absolutely.
Movie first. So I think there's three kind of people in the world, three kind of baseball fans in the world. There's some that love Major League, there's some that love Field of Dreams, and there's some that love Bull Durham. I'm a Field of Dreams guy. I appreciate the hell out of Major League. I think Bull Durham has some great elements to it, but for me, it's a distant third of those movies.
Interesting you say that, because I was thinking about this. Is Major League a parody of Bull Durham? Because Bull Durham came out in 88 and Major League came out in 89.
Correct.
And there's some elements like the curse on the bat in both of them, and like the voodoo and the stuff.
I don't think it was a parody. I think it was just a lot of just similar ideas rolling around Hollywood or similar mindsets about baseball at the time. It almost is kind of a time capsule of how people perceive baseball in the late 80s.
Growing up, I would have said I was a Major League fan above anything. It's a more cartoonish version of Bull Durham, I'd say, but Bull Durham is my number one. I'm a Bull Durham.
You're a Bull
person.
Durham guy.
Yeah.
So for me, here's where Bull Durham lacks, and maybe I'm curious to hear your take. So for me, Field of Dreams fits the drama much better than Bull Durham. For me, Major League is much funnier than Bull Durham.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, I think Bull Durham sometimes feel like doesn't know exactly what it wants to be, and because of that I feel that's where it falls short.
Yeah, I get that. I think it's just such a good love story and like the a drama, and then there's just comedy in it, and the timing of Susan Sarandon and Tim Robbins is just so good that yeah, it kind of shines through.
Costner and Sarandon have such a strange chemistry. So they're very, it's good. It's a good chemistry. It's just unique. I don't remember seeing a couple like this in too many movies.
I, the first time I watched it, obviously Kevin Costner's the star, and you love him. But it's like the more I watch the movie, Kevin Costner's the straight guy, and he doesn't really do much. It's Susan and Tim Robbins that are.
Tim Robbins Susan. Is almost entirely comic relief. That's his entire.
I don't know where this is in terms of like his first movies or whatever.
Very early on.
Yeah, I mean he's so young, but he does such a perfect like airhead. Burnout kind of stoner guy. Dumb jock.
A naive, dumb young jock. Yeah.
Talented as hell. Yes. Dumb jock. All he knows is his sport.
Yes. It wasn't supposed to be Tim Robbins. The studio wanted Anthony Michael Hall, the nerd from like Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
And 16 Candles. It was supposed to be him. And you see him a couple years later, Edward Scissorhands. You can see he's a little bit more bulked up, but the studio pushed back. And him and Ron, the studio and Ron Shelton got into a fight. Ron Shelton at one point says, I'm going to quit the movie unless you let me have Tim Robbins. And finally, the studio relented. But the studio did not want Tim Robbins.
When I saw Tim Robbins, is it Tim Robbins or Tim Robinson?
Tim Robbins.
Tim Robbins. All right.
Tim Robinson is the sketch comedian
From
SNL.
When I saw Tim Robbins' name on there, the Shawshank guy, that's all I know. Yes, that's the only role I know him really well as.
He's also in oh my God, Clint Eastwood movie where it's a sad movie. Kevin Bacon. Oh my God, I'm getting old. This is what happens when you get old. Don't get old. Sean Penn, Mr. Gripper.
Oh, Mr. Gripper. Yeah. Good movie.
Yeah, very good movie.
2003 nominee for Best Picture, I believe.
I believe you're right around that time, right? Yeah. Tim Robbins in that too.
Okay.
I mean, he definitely was in some, but you're right. I mean, the first thing you think of, right? It has to be Shawshank.
Yeah, Shawshank, such a serious movie. I mean,
I would say number two might be this.
Yeah. In terms of
just what you think of when you
box office, yeah.
No, not box office. So we'll get into that in a second. This movie was not. I thought I was shocked on how little money it made. It did okay, but it was not a giant hit. It came after VHS rentals and on cable, where Bull Durham became what it is now, which is one of the most iconic sports films ever.
Because I remember whenever I played Little League, the teams were minor league teams.
Okay.
And whoever got the Bull Durham hat and got to be the Durham Bulls, awesome, amazing. It was what a privilege. So it was big enough to where we knew who they were in 96, 97. Yeah. Like, I don't know, what is that? 6 or 7 years after the movie came out. So
It definitely had a much, as time went on, it's become much more beloved. It got nominated for Best Screenplay, an Oscar nomination. So it was definitely like critics liked it. People liked it enough. It just wasn't a giant hit. We'll talk about it right now. So the box office for this movie, I was stunned to see. Not only did it not ever hit number one, it didn't even hit number one, two, or three. The highest it ever grossed was in fourth place, which is on its third weekend in release. So the problem was it came out summer of 88. So it's going up against Big. It's not a good movie at all, but Crocodile Dundee 2.
Oh, man.
Red Heat, The Great Outdoors. Just dropped right in the middle of the summer here. And then the next weekend, what came out? Who Framed Roger Rabbit? And I know that you're going to have a different... This is an R-rated movie. Who Framed Roger Rabbit obviously is not. But, you know, when you start having some of these big movies come out in the summer, it's going to make a smaller movie like this kind of get lost in the shuffle, I think.
Yeah, you only average so many movies a month or a year, you know?
Yeah, and then Coming to America came out the next week, which is such a funny. If you haven't seen that, Eddie Murphy, I know it came out in the 80s. It still holds up. It's still hysterical today. And I say, all this time, you also have Big in theaters as well. So, you know, you had a lot of different stuff out there, different stuff coming out. And I think this movie would have been much better served if it came out in the fall. Or even the spring, maybe. I feel like in the summer, with all these blockbusters, it gets lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, I don't think it's a mega blockbuster.
No.
I mean, now looking back, I don't know. Kevin Costner, I guess, is a big name. Susan Sarandon, I don't know.
Yeah,
She's not a massive...
And Tim Robbins was unknown at that point. Yeah. So there really isn't. And here's my other issue with Bull Durham. And I say issue, I like this movie. I'm not going to shit on it. I'm not saying that. But this is the reason why I don't think of it in the same... I don't have the same love for it like I do for Field of Dreams or for Major League, especially Major League, in that I don't think his teammates are particularly interesting. In fact, I don't think anyone in this movie is interesting except for the three leads. Everyone else is fucking boring to me.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The other teammates are just kind of comic relief in and out of the script.
So generic.
The coaches, I think, are very funny, though. I enjoyed the coaches. Or the managers.
The manager, Trey Wilson, who died right after this came out. He died a few months after this came out. At 40 years old, had brain aneurysm. And then Robert Wool, who you later saw in 1989 Batman. He was in that horrible HBO show Arliss for a long time. Before your time.
Yep.
But he was the coach who kind of saying gibberish and kind of more the, like I said, comedic relief. But I'm not that interested by that. I feel like the coaches you see in Major League, the other players in Major League, even like Little Big League, are so much more interesting than the players we see in Bull Durham.
Yeah, there's like seven players in Major League that you care about and storylines that are kind of intertwining. In Bull Durham, yeah, no one really.
No one. It's,
even when they're on the bus, like, and Nuke is playing his, like, guitar, and Kevin Costner's kind of like, what are you doing? Like, stop. Like, it's just all the focus is on those two.
Right.
You see some people in the background, but they don't even have really any lines. It's a three-headed monster that carries the thing, so.
Yeah, and I mean, I can understand how that might appeal to some people, or, you know, it doesn't hit for me the same way those other movies do.
I think... I enjoy the way the three do intertwine. I think they intertwine very well. I think you have Crash and Nuke's relationship, and then Susan Sarandon kind of comes in and plays her role as well. I think it's perfectly written for, you know, a veteran baseball player teaching a rookie, and then Susan Sarandon kind of has a weird floozy role. I don't know what you.
It's a strange role. It's very unique. She's also the narrator, so like she's the. We're kind of seeing the movie through her eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And it is such a unique role. I kind of respect Ron Shelton. Ron Shelton wrote and directed this. He used to play minor league baseball. That's how he got the idea. He obviously went on and did White Man Can't Jump. He's done a ton of sports movies, including the one we did last week with Kelly, Tin Cup. So Ron Shelton's done sports movies almost his entire career. And the Annie character is unique. And I will say the screenplay you mentioned is fantastic, especially some of the dialogue. So, like, you know, strikeouts are fascist. Like, that's such a great line.
Strikeouts are fascist. Groundouts are dictatorship.
Democratic.
More democratic. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, that's brilliant. And then obviously the monologue he gives about things he likes is just all time.
Yeah. Whenever you had MySpace and you had your, like, quote you could put.
Yeah.
So many people put the Bull Durham quote, and it's just so overused. It's a great quote. It's amazing.
Yeah.
The cock, the pussy.
Yeah.
But it's just so overused.
Yeah, it is, but that's not the movie's fault. Like, you know, it's almost like proof that it's such a great thing where it's so timeless and it's held up so well.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Plus, he hates the DH, and I hate the DH, so that works for me.
You're a purist.
I am. I can relate to Crash Davis in that end. That's about where the relation's at. Because I'll tell you right now, Kevin Costner, this movie is very handsome.
Oh, it's
very handsome.
He's just kind of hot in the movie. Like, he doesn't do much. He's not, like, a great actor. He's just
I think he's pretty good.
He's just, like, a hot veteran baseball player.
But he's so believable. He's such a good athlete, because he really is in real life, that you believe that he's actually... Unlike Tim Robbins, who can't pitch.
Right.
It looks ridiculous.
Yeah, you never see him...
He throws the ball, like, with an open hand. It's very strange how, like, his mechanics don't work. You can never throw 96 that way. It looks very goofy.
Mm-hmm.
That's a credit to, once again, like a Little Big League or even Major League. I feel Major League made sure to have guys on set that played Major League Baseball. And I feel like this was lacking here. This at times did not feel like it. It took me out of the movie a couple of times.
Yeah. The love story takes over more of the movie than I remembered.
Me too.
When I rewatched it, I was like, oh, okay, all right, there's not as much baseball in this.
It's almost a love story first. I mean, and it is, because if you look at how the movie begins and ends, the baseball is just a vehicle. This really is a love story.
Right. Yeah.
And maybe that's where some of the... So, like, Field of Dreams is a movie about baseball, but it's also about, you know, lost dreams or regret or getting older. But baseball is, I think, more the center of it than, I feel like, with Bull Durham.
Yeah, but I think with Bull Durham, you just... Again, the three characters, you care so much about them. And the whole movie, Costner and Susan Sarandon are like, are they going to fuck? Are they not going to fuck?
Yeah.
And then gets the girl at the end. And you're like, okay, all right, they finally did it. So I guess that's the payoff. So you have to love the characters to love the movie. I find them very enjoyable. I enjoyed it.
They're both very likable. Like a great example of how likable Costner is. So Costner is going to the Bat Boy to get a new bat, and the Bat Boy gives him a new bat and says, you know, Crash, hit a home run. And Costner goes, shut up. And that's very funny. And like, you have to be a likable actor to pull that off and still like the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And you do with Costner. You just laugh along with him.
Yeah. Kevin Costner, is it? He seems very cool. Is it true he banged Cal Ripken's
wife? So this is the rumor. So Ripken's in the middle of a streak. And all of a sudden, there's a power outage at one of the games. Meanwhile, the power outage only affected, I forget they were at Memorial Stadium or if they were at Camden Yards yet, but it was right around that time, early 90s. Wherever they were playing, it was a home game for Baltimore. Power outage only affects the stadium, no one else. Ripken ends up, was late to the ballpark for some reason, ends up getting there, lights come on, and they can play the game. The rumor is the reason he was late was because he got home that afternoon before he's going to the ballpark, and he catches his wife in bed with Kevin Costner. Now, this is a long time rumor. It's an urban legend at this point. Is it true? Is it not true? Was the power outage legit? Is this a weird story people are making up to explain the power outage? I don't know, but it's a hell of a story.
Is Kevin Costner in all the baseball movies? Is he like...
He's in a lot of sports movies. I mean, think about it. He's in both of these.
Yeah.
He's in Tin Cup. He's in For the Love of the Game. He's in Field of Dreams. Forgetting some. Like, Kevin Costner, Draft Day. Kevin Costner's in a shitload of sports movies. We will not be covering Kevin Costner next week, I promise. But I wanted to do these two Costner movies to kind of show also just the juxtaposition of his career. This is near the beginning. Mm-hmm. This is after Untouchables. But it's before Field of Dreams. It's before Waterworld. It's before JFK. It's before a lot of...
Before Dances with Wolves.
Yes. Right. Yes, exactly. It's before he... This is when he was still a younger Hollywood star. And then with McFarland, we're seeing the tail end before he goes into TV and does the show on Paramount. What's the Western
18,
show?
19...
No, it's the...
Yellowstone.
Thank you.
Fuck you. Got it.
Go Bibs! You get three of those and you get a gold star
all right.
At the end of the episode. So,
love it.
Yeah. Any other takeaways from Bull Durham? What do you like about what makes it better for you than Field of Dreams or for Major League? Or what do you I know you're not a huge I'm a huge baseball guy. Like baseball is my sport.
Well, so growing up, baseball was my sport.
Okay.
My whole family, the baseball fans, Braves baseball, that's what we watched. Major League was a big movie playing at my house. You know, Friday night, dad sitting in the chair, TV on, Major League's on TBS. Okay, we'll watch it. What I like about, like I said, I think Major League is a little more cartoonish version of baseball, and Bull Durham's a little more realistic, but I loved how realistic Bull Durham was while being funny. I think the superstitions and stuff that are in Bull Durham and the relationships of like veteran players and all that can go into any single sport you're talking about, like baseball, football, basketball. So I enjoyed that. I just think it's a journeyman's story almost, you know, just seeing another side of the sport.
Yeah, the Crash Davis stuff is interesting. It's interesting how like the manager even treats him, like he treats him differently, or Crash will get the manager advice.
Yeah, I love the scene when the manager's like, "Ah, I can't control them," and he's like,
"Gotta scare them. They're kids."
He's like, "They're kids. You gotta scare them."
Yeah,
and then throws all the bats in the showers, gets them. It's like, yeah, kids. Yes, it's very good.
And I like that because you forget they're kids sometimes. You forget that when you go watch minor league baseball. Especially, I'm so old, even Major League Baseball are kids, but minor league, they're 18, 19, 20 year old kids.
They're 6'5, muscle bound. It's insane. And then you're like, oh, this kid's 18.
Right.
You know, he's throwing 96 miles an hour. I'm trying to think of other instances. I just really enjoyed the number one rule of baseball, don't think. And at the end, he's like, you got to be fearless. You got to have, you got to be arrogant. And he's like, ignorant. He's like, no.
No.
I mean, arrogant. Yes. He's like, I know. It's like, it's getting you pissed off. Hilarious. But yeah, the relationship between those two of the old guy and the young guy, and they finally learn to coexist because the young guy kind of grows up a little bit. I love that. Now I kind of just fucking forgot what I was going to say. But
talking about the don't think part.
No fear, no thinking. Yes. It's the same with any job, really. but especially with a creative job or just life, you can't overthink it. You just got to do it, and that's how you get stuff done. If you overthink it, you're gonna
especially
fuck it up.
Sports,
yeah, like, oh, know, for like, sure. When you just have to react,
there's
yeah.
that great scene where you hear, and sometimes I don't like this, but I think Shelton does a great job with it, where you hear his inner monologue and you hear his internal thoughts. He's batting. And he's like, all right, like the first pitch was this. And then he starts thinking about Annie and he takes a time out. He's like, whoa, I got to get this girl out of my head. Uh-huh. I got to focus on this. And you hear him kind of go through that process. And it's kind of cheesy because you don't see him, you know, you just hear his internal monologue. But it's really effective. I thought it worked really well.
Yeah, yeah. So you're talking about how you didn't really care for the side characters or whatever.
No.
One of the times when they get off the bus, they see the figure skaters are staying yes. at the hotel. And he's like, oh, if I could hook up with that chick, my dry streak would go away, or I'd start hitting better. And I was like, there's so many times that we'd be like, if I have sex, like I'll get back in the groove and right. I'll be feeling good, and I'll. So it was just kind of a movie where you the boys, you get it. Oh, gotta help the boys, you know.
Yeah, there is a lot more of, maybe this is why someone might like Bull Durham more than Field of Dreams. It is a lot more of camaraderie. Field of Dreams is about, like I said, a lost hope. It's also about like one man's journey where, you know, obviously Terrence Mann comes into the picture and you have other parts come in, but it really is this one guy's journey.
Right.
And his relationship with his father and dreams and stuff like that, where Bull Durham is a lot more of hanging out with the guys. Mm. But I think Major League does that better. Like the scene at the steak restaurant with Tom Berenger and Wesley Snipes and Charlie Sheen, that's hanging out with the guys. And I feel like that's so much more effective because you have better actors and just, I don't know, it's a better situation than in this
movie. And in Major League, when they have the cardboard cut out of the girl yes. and they're taking the post notes off, like that's the boys being boys. That's fun.
The love story to me here, it's very well acted. It's and usually written because you have a different character. The Annie Savoy character is unique. But I just didn't care that much about it. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't hook me in. I think this is where so I've seen Bull Durham about 5 times now, and I never get that hooked in. I can appreciate it. I can respect the great dialogue. I respect the hell out of, especially Costner's performance. I think Tim Robbins isn't great here. It's kind of a goofy, stupid role. He's fine. He's doing what he needs to do.
Yeah.
I'm just not that enthralled by it. But I'm never 1,000% sucked in because the love story, I just don't give a shit about
it. The love story is super weird whenever, yeah, she basically picks Nuke and then at the end she's like, oh, I'm gonna go with Kevin Costner.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, it's not a traditional love story, and it is a little,
and she like sleeps, it's the whole, there's like a lot of like, I don't say disbelief or just, it's just like she fucks a different guy every year, and the guy magically gets better because of like she's reading poetry to him, or she has batting tips for him. And that part to me is like, this is just too far for me. Like, this is a bridge
too far. She teaches him how to slow down and be a man and just take your time.
And I know they're trying to parallel that with the mentorship that Crash is giving him, mm-hmm. but that mentorship I'm so much more interested in than Annie's, which I feels like Hollywood-y or artificial.
The advice that a veteran would actually give, like a rookie player.
Like, I'd rather see, you know, 108 minutes of that, and then no. I bet I like this movie a lot more if, and nothing against Susan Sarandon, who's very good here in a weird role. It must be hard to, but like, if you took out that character and just had it Crash Davis mentoring Nuke Lelouch, I think that to me is a better movie. But I understand. But who the fuck am I? This movie is maybe, it probably has surpassed Field of Dreams. It might be the most beloved baseball movie that exists right now.
I love Field of Dreams. I think it's a great movie, but I the Catch with Your Dad, I guess, is kind of lost on me still. Like, I'm not old enough to appreciate it. I think as you get older, you're like, oh,
your dad
wow.
dies.
Yeah,
it
yeah,
also
yeah, yeah.
Packs that's, a punch.
I was just talking to someone about that, and like, yeah, when your dad dies, you'll understand.
Yeah.
Like, all right. I think it was Large.
It's dead on.
His dad's alive.
Haha, pardon the pun, but it's absolutely right, because like, you can't get it back. And it's like, yeah, your dad is, you know, probably the 60s.
70s, brother.
Okay. But I'm hoping he's in good health. You could probably, if you really wanted to, go have it catch them right now. Yeah, I'm sure you're not throwing fastballs, but could you throw the ball and catch it? And
yeah.
It'd be kind of weird and awkward because you're an adult, but like, you could do it if you wanted to.
Oh, I could do it.
But like, when he's dead, you can't.
Right.
And you're like, all right, you kind of long for that. There's a lot of like emotional shit.
Yeah, I get that. Like calling him, like calling him on the phone. Like, I can pick up the phone and call him whenever. Right. And then one day you're just like,
one day you can't.
I want to, you know, I really want to call my dad right now, and you can't.
It sucks, and you like want to ask about advice or ask, and then like for a while it's advice, and then it becomes just his. You want that story, that take? Oh, what? Remember that story you're talking about, or what did you do here? Where were you here? And now I'm at an age where I'm older than my dad ever was, so I don't think I go to him for advice anymore. But now I just kind of like you want that buddy to hang out with, and you, all of that's gone when they go. So like the Field of Dreams stuff is so emotional. Where this, the love story here, I've never. It's so unrelatable to me, like this with the Annie stuff with her fucking different guy every year, and it's just weird, and there's a disconnect there for me with this movie.
Yeah, it's different, and I enjoy an original different
me too
script, and I it's not what I would the story that I'd pick immediately, but I'm like I enjoyed it, I liked it. I'm thinking of, you were talking about how you're older than your dad. I was thinking of, I don't know if you'll remember the line, Tommy Lee Jones in No Country for Old Men, like the very end. He's just like, well, I'm twice the age he ever was.
No, you think about that stuff a lot. It's very fucked up. And it's crazy because in our minds, our fathers are this older, wiser guy. And when you realize, it's always, like, it's weird too when you become a grown-up. Like when you become an adult and you realize the same age maybe your dad was when he had you, and you're like, they had no answers. They didn't know what the fuck they were doing.
Right.
Like, they're just kids trying to figure it out. And then when you realize you're older than your dad ever was, it's like, wow. It's just so weird. It's such a mind fuck. Because even when I'm 43, even at 43, my dad has a place in my brain of, like, being this guy that you go to for all the answers. Like, even that never goes away. Your parents have this, like, elevated place in your mind. And when they're gone, or I luckily only lost one, you know, it's bizarre. It's very strange.
When you look in the mirror, are you like, yeah, this is the guy I thought I'd look like? Or is it unrecognizable?
No, I think I look, I thought, I mean, when I was a little kid, I probably thought I'd be bigger. I'm still scrawny, but.
I'll bulk up.
Yeah, I'll fill out one day. I look pretty similar to how, like, I haven't lost my hair or anything, so I feel like I have like, you know, crow's feet here.
Mm-hmm.
No, this is, I guess, this is what I thought.
Yeah.
Not too far. You look very young for your age. I'm sure you're going to, you'll be 43 and maybe when you're 60, it's different. And like your hair is all white and you're like, holy shit, I'm fucking old. Like I haven't quite got there yet.
There's times where I'll go home and I'll look at my dad and my mom. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh fuck, they're not the 50-year-olds they were whenever I was in high school. Time.
When I go home and see my mom, it's like they're old people now.
You are so frail.
Well, it's crazy to think because I remember when my mom was 23 when she had me. So I remember my mom when she was in her 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's almost 70 and it's just like, oh my God. Like, you know, they're old. Like I said, my parents are old people now. My sister's had three kids. My parents, I know you have nieces and nephews.
Yep.
Like your parents are the grandparents. And that's such a mind fuck.
That's, hearing my nieces say like grandma and grandpa to my mom and dad is just fucking wild.
So weird.
Yeah.
Okay. So most valuable player, least valuable player, Bull Durham, what do we got?
Brother. My most valuable player, you talked about him earlier. You said you didn't really care for his performance. I love Tim Robbins as Ebby Calvin Lelouch. I don't know how far out of his range it was. Again, I'm talking about the Shawshank Tim Robbins that I know. It was very far from that. So I was like, wow, this character, I never saw him being this. I thought he was hilarious as that kind of spacey jock. Whenever he gets his first win, when he's talking in the locker room to the reporter, he's like, yeah, it was just far out. Like, I can't really describe how far out it was, but Crash is looking at him like, this fucking idiot.
He's very good. I think it's more of this, I don't love how it's written, but like at the end, when he's spouting the same cliches that Crash told him, his hair's all slick and everything. I like that a lot.
It's so good. And then just like whenever he's in Susan Sarandon's bedroom and she's like, take your shirt off. And he's like, oh, just how naive he is. He just has that innocence of I'm about to have sex with this chick, and like he has no idea that he's about to for the entire season just be her bitch.
Yeah,
you know. So I thought he just his naivete was perfect.
Yeah, I'll go with Costner for me. He's the heart of this movie. I think we both agree this is really a Susan Sarandon's story. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we're looking at it through her eyes. It's her narrative. But for me, I just think this performance is absolutely great. He never does too much. It feels so real. The minor leaguers that I've worked with in the past with the National Pride or whatever, the older guys do act like this. They become like, I say soft-spoken, but they have this like gravitas about them too, especially ones who had been to the major leagues.
Mm-hmm.
Like they do walk a little different. They do carry themselves differently. He's such a great athlete. I believe he's a catcher. I guess he insisted on when he was throwing to second base as a catcher, he insisted on doing all those himself. And obviously the catcher wears a face mask. They could have had anyone do that.
Right.
He's like, I want to make all those throws. When he's in the batting cage talking to her and he's hitting the ball with one hand, that's pretty fucking good. Like,
yeah.
Kevin Costner can
wood bat.
Just, yeah, and he's like poking on, like, that's pretty good. So for me, it's Costner. Who's your LVP?
My LVP, and I don't know if he has an official name, but the Durham Clown.
Max Patkin. Oh, no. You go after Matt. So he's a real, that's a real guy.
Oh, God.
He's dead.
Good.
No.
Good.
No.
Just this carny.
You're not getting a gold star for this. I'm telling you right now.
This carny.
Oh, no.
Just showing up to the games and dancing for a minor league team.
That's the entertainment
back. Oh, stop. No. I don't want. Stay away from my kids. Let me watch the game. I don't need this clown flapping his arms around.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
Is he the one in the pink suit later on? Or is that that's the owner of the team?
I think it's somebody different. Max Patkin, we do see him at the bar later on with...
okay, that's...
With Susan Sarandon.
He has like one tooth.
Yeah, he doesn't have...
Because he's a carny. He's a freak.
Well, he's not a carny, not a freak. He's the baseball... He's a clown. And he would back... kind of before you'd see like San Diego Chicken or Philly Fanatic, before those mascots, you'd have guys kind of dress up and just kind of act goofy. And that was kind of like... what they would have for entertainment back then. Now we have like Mr. Bad or whatever, or Philly Fanatic and stuff like that. But back then, guys would do that, especially in minor leagues.
Yeah, in the movie, he's wearing a Mets baseball jersey.
He is, and that's because the Mets were so bad in 1962. That's when, like, so he's kind of like saying, like, oh, I'm awful, or I wait for a bad team. I'm a clown. I'm a goof.
They were only bad in 1962?
Well, they were from 62 to 68. They were terrible. 62, 65, they were incredibly bad. In 69, of course, they won.
Was that when that was then they got Homer? The Beagle in 62?
I don't remember Homer too well. Mr. Met was pretty early on.
Okay.
But yeah, so you're going Max Pack, and I don't like that at all. It makes me sad.
Now knowing he's the guy in the bar, I feel a little bit...
He's pretty good in the bar.
Yeah, I enjoyed him in the bar, but when he's in that clown costume flapping his arms, I wanted him dead. I wanted a brick thrown at him.
This is a Max Packin safe zone. I'm also going to pick a dead person. I'm going to go with Trey Wilson as the manager. And this is not really a knock on him. I feel like there's not too many bad performances here. I don't have a ton of LVPs. I also don't feel like there's a lot of characters in this movie, so it's tough to pick one. I'm going to go with Trey just because I think that manager role, while not bad, is entirely forgettable.
Very forgettable.
Robert Wool is doing more.
The assistant manager is definitely the more recognizable role. He's got the good lines, like, oh, he's breathing out of his left eyelid wrong. He's got the good stuff. He's got the good lines.
Now, for film nerd fans, this is why I had no idea. So, Trey Wilson is in this movie. He dies. One of the next movies he's going to do is Miller's Crossing, the Coen brothers film. He obviously couldn't do it because he was dead. Replaced by Albert Finney, who is a acclaimed actor. He's Aaron Brockovich. I know you saw that recently. He was in the Annie movie from 1982 that John Huston directed.
Yes, I made Aaron Brockovich my personality for a whole week after I watched it.
That was a tough time in the office for all of us. But Trey Wilson was supposed to be that role, which is crazy that you would replace Trey Wilson with Albert Finney. That's like replacing a random actor with Robert De Niro, basically. Like, I mean, it's not that far. Finney's a great actor, so it's crazy.
That's like replacing Brandon Walker with Jeff Vibbert.
I think it's actually a pretty fair comp. Yeah. That's right. So I'm going to pick Trey Wilson. Not a knock on poor Trey. By the way, I'm older than Trey ever was. Trey died at 40, so I got Trey beat as well. I got Trey beat and my father beat. How about that?
Damn.
Take that, Trey Wilson. And score 1-100. What are we giving Bull Durham?
I'm giving Bull Durham a 93 out of 100.
Oh! Oh!
Yes, I was
really high grade.
Yeah, I know. I think it's the best baseball movie of all time.
Wow. All right.
I'd say this, Major League, Field of Dreams, League of Their Own. You hate League of Their Own.
I don't hate it. I don't love it. But you know, you're taking a real hard stance there, huh? I'm going to start calling you Generic Vibs. Oh, Generic Vibsy.
Wait.
My favorite baseball one is the ones that everyone loves.
Oh, no, I'm just saying. Those are
the standards. Those are the standards.
What else?
Yeah,
what,
find a B side a little bit.
Yeah, what other know. What? I'm
we're,
trying
cover, to, we're covering them. You
want to know what? Hardball. Hardball.
There we go. Now
Hardball is my favorite baseball movie. I wanted to suggest Hardball. I did suggest Hardball.
You did. I wanted to pick a bigger movie. But I'm glad I had you on for this because my ranking, I'm going to give it a 79, which is going to infuriate people. And how it works for the rating system is we take our scores and average them together. So this way, at least Bulldrum will show a higher ranking on the list. Because I think it deserves a higher ranking than my 79. This is how I feel about it. Now, remember, it's 0 to 100. 50 is average. So I'm saying it's a good movie.
Right.
79 is a good score. But I don't think it's not great for me. It's just not. And but if someone says it's great, I'm not going to argue with them. You know, this is not like Marty Mush arguing the value of an RBI. I'm going to lose my mind and fight with him. This is simply based on taste. This is absolutely a good movie. It's very good performances by a director that I like a lot. It just doesn't quite connect for me. Fair? Unfair?
I think that's very fair. Right. I think it's very fair.
I'm sure people on the internet will be fair about it as well.
It's not a traditional baseball movie in the sense of like guy, girl.
Well, there's one thing I like about it. There's no big game at the end.
Yes, I think and that's the cliche big
it stays
games.
Out of a lot of those cliches, and I think Bull Durham should get a lot of credit for that. And I think that's a big reason why it's so beloved today is that it's different.
Yeah, he makes it to the league, and they just kind of talk for like the last like 40 minutes.
Well, yeah, Kevin Costner doesn't even get to the majors. Just Nuke does.
Right.
So that's kind of deflating. And we talked about that a little bit with Tin Cup, where Ron Shelton's philosophy is either you win the big game or you get the girl. You can't have both. So like White Man Can't Jump, Woody Harrelson gets to kind of live out his existence being a hustler, what he always wanted to be. In Tin Cup, Kevin Costner's character doesn't win the U.S. Open, but he gets Rene Russo. Mm-hmm. And here it's similar. Kevin Costner gets Susan Sarandon, but he doesn't get to go back to the majors.
Yeah.
His baseball career actually is over at the end of the movie.
Right.
Which I think is a pretty fair way to look at it. I like that Shelton doesn't give them both.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to think of other. I enjoy when a movie doesn't have heavy scenes of the sport. You know, I'm trying to think. Like I just watched Slapshot, not too long ago, and it's so old that they like couldn't film. You know, it's hard for them to film action hockey shots.
The only movie so far we've covered in this show that's older than that is Rocky, which I think came out a year before.
And I think Raging Bull came out after the first
Raging
Rocky.
Bull came out in 80.
Yeah, 1980, yeah. And Rocky came out like 78?
76.
76, jeez, wow.
Yeah. Ready for McFarlane?
I'm ready.
All right, so I'm going to give a quick just synopsis of McFarlane USA, because I had never even heard of this movie. Even though it did okay at the box office, it made $43 million. But Kevin Costner plays a football coach that gets fired for throwing a cleat at a player. He had been fired a couple times before that. He ends up in McFarland, California, which is a predominantly Hispanic town.
Mm-hmm.
And he's hired to be an assistant football coach, gets into a disagreement with the real football coach, ends up becoming the cross-country coach kind of by default, and ends up building a powerhouse cross-country team. And it's a quiet story. It's, I think, a lovely story. I really enjoyed this movie. I had no expectations coming in. I liked the hell out of it. It's funny. I'm going to give these movies pretty similar ratings, but it just shows you like one movie is incredibly high expectations with Bull Durham Classic. I'm probably going to be boosting this up just because I feel like a lot of people are, where everyone boosts up Bull Durham, but this movie I liked a lot.
Yeah, so McFarland USA, I remember sitting in the theaters and seeing the trailer pop up before a movie. And my eyes rolled out of my head because I was like, this movie looks so fucking stupid because it's a Disney movie.
It is.
And the trailer, it was very Disney. And I cannot stand when movies are too Disney. And that's my one problem with this movie is sometimes the villains in it are just a little bit forced. Where it's like the classic 80s bully.
In this, right. You're right. So the other white races are very much that 80s bully.
Yeah.
But I will say, of the main characters, there's no real bad guy.
Correct. Yeah. No, yeah. There's little obstacles.
There's obstacles, and some of them are family, you know, the family might need these guys to work on the farm or pick fruit, you know, or whatever it is. All these sort of things, obstacles come up. But I feel like they're more natural. It's not this forced villain.
Right. See, I don't know if it was forced. Granted, I don't know. When the coach is making all these little like, racist comments and stuff, it's like, I don't know if it just... It seems a little forced.
That part did.
Like, granted, there are shitbag coaches, but no coach is gonna shit down. Like, no coach that's like coaching a powerhouse cross country team is going to go up to this guy who just started with this team that's like trying their best, that's wearing not the best jerseys, and be like, "Hey, good luck, you fucking piece of shit." It's like, you don't. It's
good luck, amigo. It's cross, and like, like, what are you doing here? Yeah, that part was a little.
It's and there's a couple coaches that did that shit, and it's like it's cross country number one. Like, there's very little fighting or drama. You'll have some elbowing and stuff. There's one scene where McFarland's number one, I'm kind of going on a tangent, I feel like. There's one scene where McFarland's number one runner, it's the first race that they run.
Yeah.
He, like, tries to split two runners from two different schools.
Okay.
And then he dies, like, 200 yards in front of him. It's like, he's the asshole there. It's not it's not the two other runners that he's, like, trying to, like...
Yeah.
He splits them and then just die. Like, if you're going to split someone, like, you should just keep going. They should never be able to catch you again if you're going to be that big of an asshole and you can't go around them. It's just very unnecessary. But I guess it explains the hill. I think the way the coach kind of takes accountability all the time. I love that.
Me too.
I'll let you talk.
That's great. Those are all good things. So the thing I love most about this movie is Kosh's performance, which is very quiet, understated. And I love the kids. And I love how he works with these kids. And I love that it showed me a part of the world that I'm not super familiar with. I'm obviously not Hispanic. It's no surprise probably to anyone watching this or listening to this. I grew up in New England or New York in the Long Island. So it's very, very white most of the time I was there. So this brings me to a world that I wasn't familiar with. It talked about a sport I'm not familiar with at all. I did some running in high school as a kind of a club sport.
Mm-hmm.
My school later on would build a beautiful track and become like one of the preeminent track schools in New Hampshire. Not when I was there.
You paved the way.
I did. Yeah. They're like, we got to do this. The track's named after me. It's not.
No big deal.
Nothing in the school has any remembrance of me at all. Seeing him kind of mold this team and just I loved how it dumbed down the sport enough. And I wonder how you feel about this. It dumbed down enough for me to understand it and really be able to have a rooting interest in what was happening. Did you feel like you were being talked down to?
No, not at all. I did laugh whenever they're about to start the first meet and Kevin Costner's like explaining the point system for cross country. He's like, it's like golf. But that's how I describe it to people. It's like,
okay.
It's the scoring system's like golf. You want a lower score.
Yeah.
And if you get first place, you get 1 point towards your team. Yeah. So it's just funny to me that in a football movie or a baseball movie, they don't have to be like, all right, you hit the ball with the bat and it's a home run. You know what I mean? They don't have to explain the rules of the sport every movie, but cross country, you do. But I don't think he was talking down. I thought that was perfectly fine.
Yeah, I thought the running stuff, as much as you probably think, oh, cross country, yawn, no thanks. I thought they were shot beautifully. The director, I want to make sure I get her name because she does such a great job with this movie because she uses the landscape around them. You know, this is all shot in California, obviously, but not the California that we know, LA or stuff. It's all shot in kind of this probably north. I don't know even. I don't even want to assume that. I don't really know where this is. I don't know where McFarland is.
I will say, I want to say it's by like a Bakersfield almost.
They mentioned that. Right. It's because they keep assuming that the coach is living in Bakersfield. He's like, no, I live here in McFarland. Right.
Yeah.
So it's like northern, right?
I'd say north. Yeah.
And it's not the typical California and it's shot beautifully.
It's rural. It's almond groves. They have like a lot of almond groves that they're like running under the trees. And I was comparing the real story of the team in McFarland to the Disney movie. And they were saying like they'd run in the heat underneath the almond trees, like in the shade of that.
At one point, he has them run over mounds of, like, they have huge mounds of almonds because they don't have hills where they are, I guess. And it must be like a flat area. And he has them just run up and down these almond hills.
Oh, they got mountains, but I think he was just to as a quick workout.
Okay.
I don't know. I was wondering if that workout would actually, like, help.
I was wondering that too, because, like, it's not like a hill you're going to run. Like, it's weird. And you also run down
and
in
then
a
you
weird
run
way.
Down in a really weird way. Like, you can get momentum,
I guess,
like, just going down.
Thighs, maybe? Get
I don't know.
This was directed by Nikki Caro. I've never seen a Nikki Caro movie. I have not seen Whale Rider. I did not see North Country. I did not see Mulan. Those are probably her three biggest. And I had not seen this. She does a wonderful job. The pacing, this movie's probably too long, but the pacing's very good in it. I wasn't really bored any stretch. And I, even though we have seven kids in the team, I felt like each of them were shown a unique light. I got to, you felt like you knew them. This movie has a lot of characters in it, but it handles them beautifully.
Yeah.
Really good script, too.
The coach that they have, Kevin Costner, I think is great. He kind of reminded me of our high school cross-country coach, where he just hands-on, cares about the kids, would do anything for the kids.
But not in a corny way.
But not in a corny way. No, it's
it feels like
it's a natural.
Yes.
It's a genuine guy who cares about the future of these kids. And that's what you want in a coach. I think it's kind of, I don't know, I feel like it's like rap music where they've made it lame to care about your like teachers and like the school you came from or like the place you came from, your hometown. It's like, nah, I think it's very cool to have like an interest in your hometown and like want to like care about it. I know Kevin Costner isn't in his hometown, but I think the guy that Kevin Costner is in it, I wish everybody was more like that. Even though he did throw a cleat at a kid.
Yes. Yeah.
But the kid was a scumbag.
He was an asshole and it was an accident. You know, he meant to throw the cleat in the locker and it kind of bounced off the locker, hit the kid. Now in real life it never happened. So the real Jim White,
that was kind of weird,
was never a football coach. He never was fired and he was a teacher that actually restarted the cross country team. We kind of go back and forth on this show where some dramatic stuff kind of bothers me, some doesn't. And maybe I'm a hypocrite here. Like the Rudy one, for instance, really annoys me because it's the last thing we see is a title card of him being carried off the field. Meanwhile, we found out that it was actually a practical joke. So like, don't use that for dramatic effect if it's a joke.
Yeah.
I feel like with this, there are some things where him being a failure first wasn't true. And that is a huge part of the first act. But for some reason, and I said maybe being a hypocrite, it didn't bother me as much as it did like the stuff that's not true in Rudy or the stuff that's not true in The Babe.
Yeah, when I was comparing them, there was nothing glaring in there that was like, well, that doesn't make sense. That's outrageous that they would do that. I thought it was all pretty pretty accurate for the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think Kevin Costner is too old for this role? Now, Costner is playing a man that has a Maria Bello is his wife. Now, Maria Bello is not, you know, not a 20-year-old actress either. But he has like two daughters, both young. I don't know. So how old was Costner? This movie came out in 2015. So that means that Kevin Costner was 45 and 50. He was 60 when this came out. Like that is probably too old.
Yeah, he was. He looked a little too old for the role.
And they never mentioned his age. It's never like, hey, old man. They go out of their way not to do that.
Right. But it still works. It's Kevin Costner. It still somehow works. One of the funniest things in the movie is just the fact that day one of practice, when he's like, all right, go run to the bridge, he tries to run with the kids.
Yes.
And he can't keep up.
Right.
I think every single cross-country coach, like high school cross-country coach, is like, you know what? I'm going to run with the kids.
Right.
I'm gonna be that coach. And then they quit after like day one or two because like I can't keep up with these kids. Right. And then they start riding a bike, like whether it's like wherever they get the bike from, whether it's their son, their wife, you know, they just got to get a bike. And in the movie, Kevin Costner's riding around on a Barbie bike, so we can keep up. So yeah, I think every coach tries to keep up with the young kids and like, oh, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, I mean, and that makes total sense. So they're going to be 60 to know. I know at 43, I'm not going to keep up with high school kids who are running. Like,
right,
it's insane. So the six, I would agree. Costner's performance here is so good, and he's such a huge part, and he does this so well that I'm able to forgive him for being 60, but I think it needs to be brought up because it is ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
He also doesn't look 60, but he looks early 50s.
He looks too old. He looks like... Yeah. It just looks off. Something's off. You look at it and you're like, wait. Because he's supposed to be like a 40-year-old guy.
Right. Like 40, right. He's supposed to be early 40s.
Early,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. Now, I'm curious when you're taking this. So this movie takes place in 1987, but they don't really go out of their way to like for a movie like Air, for instance, which I love. Mm-hmm. Air is great. Air goes out of their way to remind us we're in 1984. The music, the furniture.
It's nostalgia porn a little bit.
It very much is. And yeah, I get it. I'm a sucker for that stuff. So there you go.
Oh, I love that aspect of it. It was basketball and nostalgia.
Yeah, let's go. Me. Yeah, the movie is fantastic. And I like Air more than this. Not a ton more, but I like it more. This, 1987, but... Other than a couple of shots, some cars, some things, it really could be any time. And, you know, it doesn't need to be, you know, it could be 1967, it could be 2007, really. The music even is it's all Mexican music, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's music I'm not familiar with. So I don't know when it came out. So it almost I almost feel like I could I kept forgetting that it took place in 1987.
The first time I watched it, I never remembered a year. And then I watched it again. I was like, holy shit, this is 87. Like, I kind of forgot that. And then it made some of the like racism in it make a little more sense. It's like, okay, 87. Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe coaches were a bit more.
When they go into the town and they go to the taco shop and they're like, well, I don't know what El Pastor is. And it's like, okay, this is. There's very, like, carnitas, like, it's very basic things, but it's, like, 87, you don't have the internet also, where you can just, like, get on and, like...
I was around 87, there's way more Mexican restaurants now than there were when I was a kid.
Right.
I didn't know what all... Chipotle, for instance, didn't exist, so I didn't know what a lot of this food was in 87. I wouldn't have known.
I am an expert on Mexican food because of Chipotle. Tex-Mex food.
Broadened the minds of a lot of Americans.
Yeah, so just the options that we have today, like, they didn't have back then, so they wouldn't have known. So
I think that's fair.
If you need to remember it's in 87, but there's nothing pointing. Like, Reagan's not giving speeches in it.
Right.
You know, so you have no idea.
One thing I like this movie, so I say it's kind of a smaller story. It really is. It all takes place in this town. And there's a scene when Kevin Costner and his family go to that restaurant we just talked about. They're kind of confused about the menu. And they get out and they see some what appear to be intimidating looking Mexican guys. And he rushes his family to the car. And leaving, he just drives over a curb with one tire. And it's not a big thing, but it is like the way it's shot. It's like it has as much of a punch as if he got into a 3-car pileup. It has that much of an effect. And that's a credit to the screenplay. That's a credit to the acting. That's a credit to the director. In making a small, relatable moment of like, you know, driving over a curb and maybe feeling unsafe. And then it also pays dividends when you realize they felt unsafe for nothing. And these people were very nice people, treated them like a family. So I liked how that was all done without – I didn't feel like it was – like you mentioned Disney or mentioned like Remember the Titans, a movie we covered a couple weeks ago, where you just constantly hit over the head like racism, bad, right? This was more subtle and also I felt way more effective.
Yes. When they try to shove it down your throat, it's just like, oh, we get it. But when they're subtle about it, and it's realistic and it's more relatable, you know. There are times where I'm like, oh, I feel like that'd be me. That could be me, you know?
Right. He's got his family there. He, you know, whether not even taking racism out of it, you just have strange guys, whatever, white, black, Mexican, whatever they are, and you're getting out your family. Well, and didn't one of them give a wolf whistle or something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
So like maybe you would hurry your family into the car.
Well, yeah. Not to change the scene, but whenever he's talking to one of his athletes' fathers,
yes,
and these houses, they're Hispanic, they're mostly Spanish speaking, so he doesn't think the father speaks any English, and he's like, tell your dad it was an honor to be in this house, and he's like,
and then the son immediately says it back to his dad in English, which is very funny, and the dad is like, if it was a sitcom, he'd be like, oh no, it is an honor to meet you too, but dad's like offended, like, don't talk down to me, I'm a successful businessman, we get it, we understand what you're trying to, like, you're white, like white knighting this, like, stop.
Yeah.
We're not simple people just because a lot of us don't speak English.
It's a very good look at that world, I guess. Because I was going to say, like, cross country, I'm very familiar with, but the picking community that is featured in it, like, I have no idea about that lifestyle. That the craziest thing from the movie that is actually real from the real story was they would go and pick the fruit or whatever.
Almonds. Almonds.
Before a meet. Mm-hmm. And then they would go to the meet and race. That is, we would have people complain that their warm-up was too long. Like, oh, I can't do that. I'll be too tired. These motherfuckers are going out and picking almonds for 7 hours, 8 hours, however long you go.
It was
full shift.
That's the thing about this movie that I want to talk to you about, that I was really curious about. So this movie, we talk about how Field of Dreams is about more than just dreams. Also, about more than just baseball. It's about dreams and lost hope. McFarland USA is not just about cross country. It's just as much about work. What it means to work. What it means to put in a day's labor. And you see that with these kids who then work for their parents and doing the picking. We see Kevin Costner, I think a really cool moment. And very quietly played by Costner, he goes to the fields, tries to pick with them. He hurts his back. And the kids are like, no, this, you have to sit a certain – this is what happens to all of us.
Yeah, it's, your body's not used to it.
And then right before the big meet at the end, he's like, you guys – I'm so like, you guys impressed the hell out of me, you know, with how hard you work. He's like, I was thinking, picking that, I'll never have to work. As lousy as my job is, I'll never have to do a job this hard the rest of my life. And he talk, and it's like, it's a way to like hit the premise of white privilege, which can be a little bit of an eye roll sometimes, but also like, no, it does exist. And this movie showcases it as well as anything with that scene.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, cross country is mental. I mean, cross country is not fun. It's just grueling. It sucks. So if you're working in a field, picking, bent over, doing all that, running is nothing. Like, just it's so easy compared to what they're doing. But yeah, the final speech that Kevin Costner gives is not run through a wall, but it just makes you really appreciate the journey of the movie.
It also makes me appreciate people that do hard work. Like, a lot of times in movies, we see lawyers, or we see writers, or we see, you know, people in broadcasting. We see kind of more, and look, lawyers, people work hard, I get it. But like, we don't see people working their ass off, like literally working to the bone. And we see that in this movie, and it's not done in a cliched way. I think it's really done in an interesting way. Also, I like the mirror of cross-country being work. This movie never shows cross-country as fun. This movie shows cross-country as a mental game, a mental sport, as well as being something you have to work at. It never once shows cross-country as being glamorous.
No.
Bill Durham shows baseball. A lot of the baseball movies, and I love baseball, and it's very romantic. It glamorizes it. We see it with football movies. Sometimes it gets glamorized. The sport, golf,
yeah.
The Tin Cup. This movie does not do that. This movie is, yes, you might be running around pretty things around you, but the act of cross country is not fun.
Not at all. It's probably the worst spectator sport of all time as well. It's just not fun for people to watch. And just from the start to the finish, you're in pain. It's you know, when you're playing basketball, you can like, I don't know, you find a groove of his own, but cross country is just like, it's just a grind. Yeah, I really like the first race when they are doing pretty well and then they get to the hill.
Yes.
And they realize, oh, we gotta train for hills. We gotta be better at that. It's the perfect story of a cross country season.
It was great, especially as someone who's a cross country, you know, rube like me. I don't know what I'm really seeing here. I'm kind of learning as we go along with the movie, and I'm like, oh wow, these guys are doing great. That one kid, I'm thinking to myself, all right, I think I know how it's gonna go. The best kid's maybe gonna do good. The other kids aren't gonna do well, and the best kid's doing great. And then they hit the hill, and you right along. I'm sure you already saw it coming, but me being the casual viewer is right along with Kevin Costner going, oh fuck, we didn't think of that.
Yeah.
And it's such a cool, the ways, I cannot emphasize enough how well this is directed, because you're right, cross country is not a fun sport to watch. It's not interesting to watch. I would not want to, but yet when I'm watching these sequences, it's pretty exciting.
They do a good job. What is it? Chariots of Fire. I guess that's kind of an equivalent to this. Like I watched that movie, never got into it, did not enjoy it one bit.
That's kind of a drag.
It's a slog. Didn't win Best Picture in 80? No.
81,
right? 81. Raging Bull is...
No, Raging Bull did not win Best Picture. I think Chariots probably beat Raging Bull. Maybe that's what it was.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's... No.
Yeah. I've been, you know, praise this movie up and down. I do have to nitpick it a little bit. The scene where the daughter gets into like whatever happens there, where I love the scene with the birthday party. That's great. The family coming together. She goes off with the guys, and then there's like a weird shootout or something happens. It's very strange.
I did not like that part. Awful. And then the guy's like, we protected her like she was our own. Like, it's like, all right, that I could have done without that scene.
And it really, you could have trimmed that whole thing out. The movie would have had as much effect, and it would have been shorter. This movie's way too long. It's what, 135 minutes?
It was 2 hours 6 minutes.
Okay, yeah, way too long,
I think.
Take out all that stuff, because honestly, like, the crime, and I guess, you know, we have to have kind of that, because there's no true bad guy in this movie. So you have to have that sort of struggle with the family. But I'm happy with the family just liking McFarlane. Why do we need all this extra shit?
Yeah. It's speaking of no bad guy. I loved the like intertwining scene of the number one runner when he's kind of running on the mounds. He had like he was going through shit because his dad came back. He was going through it. And then Kevin Costner is like focused on that. He's worried. Forgets about his daughter's birthday cake. So he's going through it now. The number one runner's going through it. They end up meeting up again later that night on a bridge, which is kind of dramatic.
Over-dramatic.
I didn't like that. No. But I did enjoy also Kevin Costner like grabbing the kid and making sure that, like, that's the stupidest thing ever, because well, if Kevin Costner's grabbing this kid from going off the bridge, like,
bring you with him.
He might bring him with him. He might fuck him up. He might kill him on accident. Stupid. But I thought that all
the conversation they had, though, take away the overdramatic. Those are two moments. The two overdramatic moments were not necessary. But I just like them talking.
Yep. I love how it shows the sacrifice. But mainly the coach was taking with his family. I mean, these kids are now his kids. You know, this kid's going through it. He needs to look out for this kid and help him. And while he's doing that, he forgets about his own kid's birthday cake or whatever.
And it's totally believable. And you're kind of, even as a viewer, you're more focused on the track kids than you are with his real family. And this is what I'm talking about. The movie lives in the small moments. The overdramatic parts are lousy and weird and lame. But when he drives over one curb or when he forgets his daughter's birthday cake, those are the most powerful ones. They're super relatable. You understand exactly what they're going through. Yes, they're both mistakes, but they're mistakes that human beings make. And it's like, all right, I'm all on board with this. It's enough.
I didn't really comment on the curb the first time he said it. Love that scene. I didn't ever notice it the first time I watched it. What a powerful, like, awkward feeling, like, up when you go over a curb because so many people are watching.
So many people are watching. Right? And it's just a small thing. And like I said, forgetting a birthday cake, it means a lot to that family. But as far as stakes go, as far as movies go, it's pretty low. But it was so powerfully done. This is a really good movie. Who's your MVP?
My MVP is Hector Duran. He was the kid who had a good smile. You know, you're getting old and you're like, you know what, I like that kid's smile. He makes me happy. He makes me feel good.
Which kid is this?
Hector is the kid who I think he's like number 58, 57 on the football team, and he's just getting lit the fuck up.
The concussion is why he was just a kid that was a very happy, exuded happiness.
He reminded me of a kid that I would want on the cross country team who's like kind of joking with the coach, close with all the kids, cares. He's a solid player. You know what I mean? Shows up, does what he's supposed to do. But he's always smiling and having a good time. So Hector Duran, love that kid.
So I'm going to go with Costner here as MVP. But I got to give a right there, right in Nikki Caro. She did such a great job directing this movie that I can't emphasize enough how bad this movie could have been. This could have been another Remember the Titans. Or it could have been just weird and boring about racing. It wasn't too Disney-fied. It was just the right amount of almost everything.
Yeah, like I said, when I first saw the trailer to this, my eyes rolled out of my head because I was like, this is going to be the dumbest Disney movie of all time. And it had its little moments, but it wasn't anything major. And if you know nothing about cross country, you'll appreciate it.
I knew nothing, and I enjoyed the hell of it. And I felt like I learned something. I felt like I learned something about the picking almonds. It was a great line. The kids having kind of a breakdown. He's like, you don't even think about these almonds or who picked them when you open your pack up. And that hit home because I was like, yeah, I've never thought about that once when I've eaten almonds. And I should. People worked hard to put them there. And I never even understood that was the thing that happened.
They're just in the pack.
Yeah. But like, you know, those people are working. That's such a thing, man. These families and generations of people are working their fingers to the bone for something people don't even know happens. I just assume that almonds just end up there. I don't know.
Yeah, an almond bush. Oh, okay.
I know people pick strawberries. There were some migrant workers when I lived in Florida that would pick things. But like, that is a difficult life.
In the movie, they're like, I started working for my dad when I was like 10 or 11 with strawberries and potatoes. And then whenever you turn 12, you can start picking like almonds and stuff.
Which is, I guess, even harder. It is amazing how much we take for granted. Like, you know, you walk into a supermarket and there's so many things there that people have worked so hard to get to you and you don't, or at least I don't even think about it.
I didn't even think about it until COVID when like supply lines started to get stopped and you're like, why the fuck are my eggs not here?
Yeah, this isn't what I'm used to. LVP. I don't have many here.
Oh, yeah. My LVP was the coaches. What scumbags all those coaches were in the film where they're just like, hey, you tell them vamanos, amigo, or whatever. And it's like, what if... But then again, I guess it was 87, whatever. Also, they tried to make like some of the athletes, the cross-country runners, like the bad guys.
Yes. My LVP are the kids. The racers.
So they get to the line and he's like, nice shorts.
Yeah, right.
Never would another team be like, oh, hey, nice. And they'd be like, well, look at your shitty short. Like,
yeah.
that's also shorts. It's crazy how like in the 80s and back when I was in high school, like wearing short shorts across country, people yelled at us out windows and made fun of us for wearing short shorts. Now short shorts are like the look, showing off your thighs, like it's coming back.
So you just want to tell everyone that you're ahead of the curve.
When you wear short shorts, yeah. Cross country runners got made fun of and died for your thighs to be exposed, and you're taking it for granted.
I applaud your service. Before we do score, I do want to talk about the box office. This movie, I said, did okay. Made $44 million. Didn't cost much to make, obviously, a small movie like this. It came out in February of 2015, dumping ground for movies. Disney must have had no confidence in this. And they probably shouldn't have. It opened fourth. But it was kind of a bigger week. It was President's Day weekend. It was 50 Shades of Grey. It was in its second week of release. Kingsman: The Secret Service in its second week of release, and the SpongeBob movie in its third week of release. This was up against The Duff, which I don't remember at all, and Hot Tub Time Machine 2.
I kind of remember that.
Yeah. The Hot Tub Time Machine 2 tanked. That did terribly.
Bad.
And McFarlane did beat The Duff. It made $11 million. And it did make, I said, it made it had a drop-off of 28.9% the next week, which means pretty good word of mouth. People seem to enjoy this movie. I don't remember this movie even existing. You told me we'll do it. I'm like, okay, Kevin Costner, fine. I ended up liking this movie a whole lot more than I thought I would. I'm going to give this movie an 81.
Oh. So
I'm
going
to
put this
ahead of Bull Durham, which I'm sure people will consider to be, I'm basically the Antichrist now, but I'm going to say this is 81. I really like this movie.
Wow. I love this. I'll say my score in a second. If I'm a cross country coach, I'm showing this movie before every season. Or at least during the season, you know, movie. I am going to give McFarland USA a 74.
Oh, wow. I like it more than you.
So, a 74 is a really good score. I really love it. Yeah. I love it, but I just...
Stella Blue Coffee's new canned lattes are here. Crafted with 100% Colombian coffee, each can is a good source of protein and comes in two smooth flavors, espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. And whether you're braving your morning commute or chasing your pup, Stella Blue cans are for those always on the go and for those who care. Stella Blue is more than just great coffee. It's about giving back. I named the brand after my rescue dog, Stella, who inspired our mission to help more dogs find their forever homes. Every purchase supports animal rescue organizations. So when you drink Stella Blue, you're not just fueling your day, you're saving a dog's life. Try the new cans today. Taste the difference and make a difference. All new Stella Blue coffee canned lattes now available at stellabluecoffee.com or subscribe on Amazon for 10% off.
I don't know. I don't know where my benchmark is for, because this is my first.
It's tough.
93, I feel like, is too high.
Maybe not. I think people listening to this would give Bill Durham 100.
74 is still like, I'd watch it again tonight. You know, like if it was in the 40s. Then you got to worry.
No, right. 50 is average.
Yeah,
I'm saying Bull Durham. I'm saying it's above average.
Yeah.
You know, I do like this a touch more just because the small scenes really hit me. I will say, of all the movies that I've covered in the show so far, you know, there's a few I haven't seen. This has been by far the most pleasant surprise. I really ended up enjoying this far more than I ever expected. Now, it's not the same pleasant surprise as Ed, the first movie we did with Brandon, which is about Matt LeBlanc and a monkey. That movie is so bizarre and funny and weird.
A monkey playing the hot corner, right?
I gave that, of course, an 8 of 100, but I loved it because I hated it. It was so horrible. I had to love it. Where this is something I genuinely think is a good film. Anything else? You good?
I'm great.
I'm back next week. I think I'll tell you the movies. I'm not going to tell you what I'm doing with it. I believe it's going to be Foxcatcher and The Fighter. And I will see you folks next week.